In Matthew's Gospel, the Sermon on the Mount plays a hugely significant role. It inaugurates Jesus' broad public ministry as a teacher who astounds. This morning, we listen in as Jesus begins those teachings as recorded in chapter 5. When Jesus saw the crowds, he went up the mountain, and after he sat down, his disciples came to him. Then he began to speak and taught them, saying, "Blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Blessed are those who mourn, for they will be comforted. Blessed are the meek, for they will inherit the earth. Blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness, for they will be filled. Blessed are the merciful, for they will receive mercy. Blessed are the pure in heart, for they will see God. Blessed are the peacemakers, for they will be called the children of God. Blessed are those who are persecuted for righteousness' sake, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Blessed are you when people revile you and persecute you and utter all kinds of evil against you falsely on my account. Rejoice and be glad, for your reward is great in heaven, for in the same way they persecuted the prophets who were before you." Friends, this is the good news for today.
Friends, will you pray with me? God of love and life, oil the hinges of our hearts' doors that they might glide open gently and easily to welcome your coming. And may the words of my mouth and the meditations of each and every one of our hearts be acceptable to you, our rock and our redeemer. Amen. In these past couple of weeks, back in this place, back with this family, I've experienced the great joy of the opportunity of coming home. That is, of reconnecting. It is one of those fundamental blessings that no matter how far you go, no matter how long you are gone, there is the chance when you return to reconnect. Reconnect to places of beauty, to routines that matter, reconnecting with people, with purpose, with plans, and with possibilities. There is a wholeness about that process that never ceases to amaze me. No matter how many times it has happened, it is always such a great gift to come home and to reconnect. I want to thank you all for the chance to do so. Part of that reconnecting has been figuring out what I missed while I was gone. I've listened to the worship services and to the sermons that unfolded while I was in Maine. The last one I listened to was Adele's sermon about the importance of names and naming, about identity and purpose, and what we choose to claim. It got me thinking about my own name. When I looked up its meaning on the internet, one of the definitions was from Scottish, meaning holy one or high place. Then again, in the very next sentence was a possibility that the name Brent actually comes from Brant, which designates criminal or one who has transgressed based on the Brant that they would have been given. So holy one or transgressor, probably both and, but anyway. Why I was given that name, though, in talking to my parents, was largely an act of avoidance. First, they gave me the name because they both had names that were easily turned into nicknames, and they didn't want that fate falling on me. I suppose it could be Brentley, or Jakey calls me Pipster, so I could be Brentster, but it's really hard to do anything too. Secondly, both of my parents' initials formed words. My dad was Red. My mother was Lip. So my initials are BRD. Again, nothing you can do, but I was fascinated that really both of my parents talked about picking my names for what it wouldn't do, for what it would avoid, for what it would safely distance itself from. which is diametrically opposed and completely opposite from the name that appears over and over again in our passage, a name that appears 9 times. That name is blessed. It is a word that we invoke often. We most often use it powerfully when someone who's been part of our family suddenly leaves, chooses to journey elsewhere, moves. And so we gather around, if you can remember, in the center aisle, and often we lay on hands and we offer a blessing. Blessings at partings. To offer a blessing is to offer sticky goodness that lingers, something that sticks to you, something that bonds. It is hard to overstate just how important the Beatitudes are in Matthew's gospel. For Matthew, Jesus, first and foremost, is a teacher. It is about how we live our life, and the Sermon on the Mount contains many directions as to how we are to live. Yet before he gets to those rules, before he gets to the high and lofty standard that we are called to, he first offers a name. Blessed. You shall be called blessed. You shall be named and identified as blessed, Jesus says. After 4 chapters of teaching, it says all the people who came there were astounded at his teaching, astounding at the truth of it. And yet I find that these Beatitudes, as often as they're invoked at everything from weddings to funerals and everything in between, that these Beatitudes, for a number of reasons, can actually be confounding. They can imply that we're supposed to endure the hardships, to wait for something better that's yet to come, and yet Jesus said the kingdom has drawn near. The Beatitudes have been wrongly used by the comfortable, all often to tell the afflicted, it's okay, just bear with it, you'll be great. And yet, if we pay attention, I think, to this word blessed, this name blessed, I think it changes everything. You see, if you look at that word blessed, especially in Matthew's context, one profound definition for that word is that to be blessed means that you are profoundly connected to God. The ones who are most connected to God are those who are mourning. The ones who are most connected to God are those who are hungry and weeping. There, in the midst of all these things, Jesus lists these conditions that are tied up with the human condition, both the things we do, being merciful or pure in heart or peacemaking, and then all those things done to us, the loss, the brokenness, the breaking. And what Matthew is claiming is that it is in and through all of those things that we are connected to God, because God has already gone there. The word blessed means to be fully bound to be intertwined with. And not just because in suffering we might find our way to God, even though in those moments where we have nothing else to lean on, they can be profound ways of connection. But in Matthew's view, it is in those moments that God profoundly reaches out and connects to us. If you look at the Gospel of Matthew and pay attention to the small moments, to the words we often overlook for the sake of the plot, you will notice that Jesus is a reacher-outer. In his healings, there is often an element of Jesus not just healing, but touching. And not just necessarily touching to heal, but touching to bring into relationship. The touch often not connected to the healing of the infirmity at all, but rather the bond and the wholeness. When his disciples are afraid on the mountaintop, the story we're going to get to next week, Jesus goes to them, he looks at them, he speaks to them, he touches them. When somebody asks for Jesus' healing, he looks them in the eye and he says, I choose to. The notion of blessed here in the Beatitudes is tied up with the idea that God chooses to seek out the vulnerable and the needy. God chooses to show extra love, extra grace, and extra care to those who the world has failed to fully care for, those whose frailty is exposed, and of course, to be closely entwined to those who are already tenderly responding. Because even before we get there to offer our love and care, God has already been there. And because God, through Jesus, knows exactly the fullness of need we human beings face. When Jesus says blessed, it is because he knows that in each of these conditions, people are connected to God, and that is good. And yet, poet and laugher, gardener and genius, Ross Gay, would say that these moments and conditions are not just opportunities for God to respond, but for us too. They are, he says, the reason for delight making. Ross Gay, you see, dedicates his whole life to delight, to joy making justice, as he says. In his 54-minute-long interview with Krista Tippett, when I looked at the transcript of the interview, you know how they list the sounds that you don't hear? Laughter appeared in the transcript 34 times in 54 minutes. And often in the midst of the most difficult, heartbreaking subjects that the two of them were covering. When he was asked, how do we find joy and delight in the midst of times such as these we're living in, or such as the times Jesus identified in his sermon? What Ross Gay says is, he says, how can we not? When pressed to respond to the notion that joy should somehow be considered a privilege or a luxury, there was a pause, and he said, that's dumb. Well, to be fully truthful, he said, that's expletive dumb, but a word not generally able to be broadcast on NPR or spoken from this pulpit. But the radical thing that Gay said in that interview is the radical thing that Jesus is saying here, that joy doesn't come despite the fullness of the human condition, but rather in the midst of it, and most importantly, because of it. Joy has nothing to do with ease, Gay writes. Instead, everything to do with the fact that we are all going to die. Let that sink in for a moment. That joy emerges precisely because we are all going to die. It is the truth that we are all temporary. It is the ephemeral nature of our being that invites, Gay thinks, the possibility for tenderness between us, he says. Connection through shared vulnerability. It is to train your gaze to see the wonderful possibility alongside the terrible. To recognize the profound beauty of shared experiences and truth that blossom in the reality that we will not be here forever, and so any moment that we share in truth and true connection is gorgeous and worthy of delight. Even as he said in those things, some of which Matthew identified, that we all yearn to avoid and sometimes rarely want to talk about. Here's Ross Gay's list. Brother addicted. Mother died in surgery, rejected by family, cancer came back, evicted, laid off, fetus not okay, treatment not working, daughter serving in harm's way. Gay writes that when we truly connect with each other, we can then engage in the work of justice. For the work of justice means not just arguing and yelling as we're so used to in this political season, but instead remembering why we care, or more importantly, for whom we care. That is what took my heart into seeing this passage today in a new light and a new life. Not to ignore the truth that God does draw near in those times, but the calling of God that we might too. Each of these experiences and conditions that Jesus lays out are opportunities for tenderness and connection, not just between God and people, but between neighbors. The chance to love each other as ourselves. For not only there too we all go at one time or another, but by seeing those things, by acknowledging those things, by letting others see them in our experience, we cease being phantoms or ephemeral, and we become connected in our real temporality. To read Jesus in Matthew's gospel, as we will do over the next year, has Jesus always going to the people he's teaching or serving or healing or caring for, and always seeing them in the concreteness of their condition. That whether in the giving or accepting of tenderness, the softer parts of who we are have the chance to stick together in loving connectedness. And of course, in doing so, we come face to face with God, who's already there because God goes there. To the hungry and to the one feeding. To the merciful and to the one in need of mercy. To the one whose life is falling apart in pieces and to the peacemakers. To read the Bible is to read a story of wilderness. Wilderness appears throughout the Bible as a constant motif, not just as a place of danger, but also as a place of finding new life and new directions. The people traveled through the wilderness to the promised land, after all. One of Ross Gay's students put this idea of blessedness, of connection, in this way, that we are blessed when we join our wildernesses together. When we join both our wandering and our wondering, our suffering and our surveying, that together the wilderness becomes, if not a paradise, at least a connected garden of delight. It is what I believe Jesus did, or God did through Jesus, joining us in a garden of delight. In a few minutes, we are going to be invited into a time of silence and then a time of sharing. It is our time of prayer. I am touched by how deeply this congregation has come to pray with and for one another, the very vulnerable places that you share with one another. In both the clean and beautiful places and times when we want to celebrate, and also the broken, mournful, famished, persecuted places too. I hope and trust that as we lift those prayers up, we see them not just as a way for us to pray for one another, and in doing so, connect with one another, but also a literal invitation to go there, a way of really connecting with one another. Ross Gay has learned this, that the more he practices delight, the more he sees it. He sees it sometimes in an honest laugh of someone who's walking by on the street. He sees it in the color of a couch that just seems so warm and inviting. He sees it when he sees a couple carrying a grocery bag, each with one hand on one of the handles. The truth is, the more we practice something, the more we see it everywhere. Blessed. Connected. May we look so hard and so often for those opportunities to be connected in all places and manners of our lives, that we see the opportunities for both giving and receiving, for being bound and binding in every breath we take and in every step we make. Friends, that is, I believe, how Jesus started this Sermon on the Mount, started his teaching. For once you start there looking for connection, all the rest of it unfolds like a flower before us. That is indeed the good news for today. Let us stand and let us sing about it.